you've tuned into Invisi Youth Chat Sessions, a video podcast series. Our episode starts right now. Here's your host, Dominique Vail.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Invisi Youth Chat Sessions, where you can check in for your dose of stigma-breaking, humor-filling, motivation-loving, life hacks, and empowering tips for all of the medically adultish people in life. I'm Dominique Vail, founder of Invisi Youth, host of our podcast series, and today is season 4, episode 48 of our show, and we're getting chattier than usual, and you know if you've watched the show for our 4 seasons, that seems impossible for me, but you'll learn why it's going to be for this episode very soon. We're going to get real on how to share your different points of view, having authentic conversations, and really getting into sharing your beliefs and experiences and having those hard talks. And especially for young people with chronic illness and disability, we're constantly facing those ways of having to converse about our needs and different experiences of discrimination at times with others. So we're going to have a special guest that is their entire platform of work. So I'm really excited that their entire career is now based on having conversations, and she's younger than me, guys. Let's be real. I'm really excited about this. We're going to say hello to the founder and CEO of the nonpartisan educational platform, the conversationalist Sophie Barron, originally from Kansas and now in our favorite city of New York City. Sophie is all about empowering the next generation to break out of what they call the echo chambers, to have difficult conversations and unify together. And for millennials and Gen Zs that we love it, Invisi Youth, you will appreciate some of Sophie's accolades. She's been featured in Forbes. She's been named under 25 by Social Entrepreneur Magazine and 21 Women Entrepreneurs to Watch in 2021. Incredible. And a lot of numbers that I just realized I had to whip out. She also hosts POVs, which is her own online talk show. And that's through The Conversationalist, where she gets to chat with her guests on how to break their echo chambers and unify others in conversation and to bring back that advocacy in a lot of underrepresented communities. So I'm really excited. And also in 2 seconds, you're going to see why Invisi Youth and The Conversationalist can have a bond, because we have the same color scheme, guys. Say hello to Sophie. Hi, Sophie. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dominique. Thank you so much for having me. I love everything you do with Invisi Youth and the fact that we share yellow. I think we've got a lot in common, so I can't wait for this conversation.
It's a connection when you have a bond with yellow, for sure. I'm excited about it. So we're going to jump right in, everyone, and go to Rebel Game Changer status.
Rebel Game Changer status.
One of my personal favorite segments, Rebel Game Changer status, is us building you a guide on how to become your own advocate, or what we like to call in Invisi Youth, the Rebel Game Changers. So we're really talking specifically for all of you in this young adult community on how to self-advocate with your points of view and how to have those conversations without fear of being able to share your points of view. And that's what we're chatting with Sophie about today. So the first thing I wanted to ask is, do you feel like there's a difference between when young people are sharing and advocating for their needs versus sharing and advocating for the needs of a community that they might be part of?
Absolutely. And what a great question to start with. I think at the end of the day, only you can know best what your needs are. And when you're advocating for yourself, it's so important that you communicate those needs from a first-person perspective. Something we really preach at The Conversationalist is using I statements, saying, I think, or I believe, or I experienced X, Y, and Z, so that what you are advocating for really resonates with you. And there's definitely a difference when it comes to advocating for someone else or another community or a group. And it's best to not speak for that group, but in tandem with that group. So whatever you can to best understand that group's needs and that you are helping to communicate those needs is key, but making sure that you don't insert yourself within that group if you're not a part of that group directly.
Yeah, really. It's like this, it's like that idea of having that allyship, we'll always say, is like you're walking hand with the community if you're not part of it. And especially with the chronic illness and disability space, we'll always say it's one of the most intersectional, because it's also one of the only misrepresented communities that you can join at any time, which it doesn't tend to happen with other underrepresented communities. So it really is, like you said, being able to connect to it personally, but letting somebody know that the way and the reason you might be passionate about a topic or discussing it is because you've experienced those topics and situations. And then even if on my end, I'll always say, because I'm chronically ill, and if I'm advocating for something of the wider community, I'm aware that I don't live with so many aspects of chronic illness that other people do. So you have to really be able to understand. And that's like a really nice safety net for yourself. If you feel like you're treading into uncomfortable conversation, is letting that person you're talking to know, like, this is personal lived experience versus this is because I'm in this community. I've heard these needs and I understand them.
Absolutely. And I think you are your own best advocate. And I think where we get it wrong is when we don't really communicate our needs. And so especially in situations of difficult conversations, it's so important to speak up about what you believe in and what matters to you, because even though we like to think the other person can read our minds, it's never really possible. So I'm glad that you brought that up. You know, it's important to differentiate your own lived experience from the experience of a larger group of people.
Yeah. And even kind of going off of that, do you feel like there's ways, I know we'll always say if you're talking to somebody and you can feel like their point of view is either there's a level of sort of they have blinders on because they haven't experienced that portion of what you're talking about when you're chronically ill or disabled. If you're speaking to a healthy non-disabled individual, they don't know about you needing to adapt to every aspect of just even a physical building. And you can feel that that agitation starts to make you want to be more combative in the conversation to fight for what you're trying to get them to open their eyes to. So what are things that you've learned, or that when you talk to other young people are kind of ways they can still advocate for their topic without reaching that point of starting an argument?
This is the crux of why I get out of bed every day. And I think you hit it right on the head, Dominique, in that we oftentimes only have access to empathy in relation to our own experiences. And this is a result of our echo chambers. And for those of you who don't know what an echo chamber is, it's an environment that forms right on your social media newsfeed or in your community, on your sports teams, within your family dynamics, where you surround yourself with people and perspectives that really only reaffirm your own. And when you're in those environments, you can't really see the forest from the trees and better understand other perspectives outside of your own or that group of people. And sometimes when we're trapped in those echo chambers, we have a really hard time accessing people's experiences that really differ from our own. So as you just shared that you are chronically ill, I'm sitting here as someone who grew up in a very sheltered echo chamber in Wichita, Kansas, without anyone in my family who is chronically ill or anyone in my friend group. And so I have access to people like you in my life or people on social media who have those experiences where I can educate myself. But I'm sitting here on the receiving end wondering, what does that mean to be chronically ill? And I think it's so important that we ask questions. And I think that can oftentimes be the determining factor between a conversation and a debate. If we're there in that dialogue to really understand someone else's experience and POV that is different from our own, that means that we're entering the conversation with the right intention. But if we're sitting there and making assumptions or assuming the other person knows everything about that experience and is making a judgment call, that's when a conversation can escalate. So when in doubt, ask questions, do your own research, because I know it can be exhausting to have to explain yourself constantly to new people, but find ways to really enter a conversation with that intention of learning and listening so that you can come out on the other side of it with a little bit more of a social tie or an access to that person's experience than you didn't have previously.
Yeah. And I love that when you said leading with questions, because what we'll always say is if you're speaking to people who are on our end, healthy or non-disabled, especially family members who are seeing you in your lived experience and they just don't get it because they're not in your health body, they're not seeing inaccessible buildings or unattractive fashion equipment, for your medical accessories, and they're not seeing those little things that do add up, is when you're asking questions, you're leading with curiosity. And that's where that allowing somebody to be curious about your point of view versus feeling like they're defending themselves is that's the big thing. Because once you start kind of insulting their ignorance, which ignorance has such a negative connotation, but it's actually just because there is no experience or knowledge about it. And when you make somebody feel that they're ignorant, they're immediately going to want to defend themselves, because that's not a lifestyle anybody, I hate feeling like I'm the moron in the room about a topic, but you want to be able to at least say, here, this is where aren't you curious about this or this? And if they then feel comfortable to lead that interest, even if you're not changing their mind, you're keeping that little comment in the back of their head that they might look at something differently the next time they see it. And that can kind of be a better domino for them moving forward.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. We have to stay curious. And I think that's what keeps us grounded in these conversations.
Yeah. And that's even with like a rebel, when we say rebel game changer, we say it's for young people that want to rebel against a norm, but not wanting to be rebellious again, it's the whole structure. And so for you, there's this sort of thing of people saying, I want to change somebody's point of view. I want them to understand, but do you feel like that should be the goal when you realize you're in a differing opinion with somebody? Or what do you feel like once you realize you're at a lock horns with someone, what should be the goal if it's not, I want to change their mind so they understand better?
This is a question that comes up constantly in the work that we do. Right now, a lot of what I see out in the world with our politicians, with our leadership, we see a lot of people entering any sort of conversation or debate space with the intention of changing someone's mind. But what we're trying to revolutionize at The Conversationalist is reclaiming what it means to have a conversation. And for us, it's the opposite of trying to change someone's mind. I think when we enter any sort of dialogue with that intention, we're setting ourselves up for failure, because people aren't inherently going to change their mind based on a conversation. And I think that places a lot of pressure on that particular dialogue to move the needle and completely uproot someone's belief system, when in fact, a lot of people believe what they believe in because it's taken them a long time to get there. And so I think entering a conversation with anything other than the intention to learn is setting ourselves up for failure. And I think the key to having a successful dialogue is setting that clear intention with the other person. As weird as that may sound, make sure that the other person on the receiving end of that conversation knows that you are there to better understand their point of view, to learn from their point of view, and to see if there's any opportunity for common ground. But I always abide by the notion that we can't seek to change someone's mind until we open it first. And I think if we can enter conversations with that intention to open people's minds rather than changing it or bringing someone over to your side, then you're more likely to come out of that conversation successfully.
Yeah, I really love how you said that, because finding that common ground, the biggest thing I'll always say, even as I've been chronically ill 14 years, so I was 16, I'm now 29. So you're in that space of learning your own voice and your own advocacy. And that's with the work that you do. We're in that age demographic where people are learning their conversation style as well, and kind of leading with this knowledge of compromise is equally as valuable as winning the conversation. And people think, if you don't change your opinion to mine because I see all the negatives in yours, that's if we can't compromise, it's not winning. It's not, there's no, I'm losing things. And I always remember there was this interview on The Hollywood Reporter where two of the actresses from Crazy Rich Asians were talking, and they were referencing sexism and equal pay. And I remember one of the lead actress in Crazy Rich Asians said, you know, she said, male actors will say to me, it's fine that we get equal pay. But she says, what they don't realize is if the scale has to balance quantitatively, they have to lose something in order for us to be equal. And it's the losing of something that makes them uncomfortable. It's not the equality. And I always remember that, mentioning that and going, that just really can phase into every type of inequality conversation or disagreeing of opinions, especially in the chronic illness or disability space. If you're dealing with ableism and people not understanding, well, why do I have to pay for more adaptations to a building? Or why do I have to accommodate just because one of my coworkers has a disability and now I have to do all these other things to adapt to them? And it's just this realizing that you're losing something in order for them to have an equal common ground to you, that that loss is what people think is, I'm losing, so I'm not winning, if that makes sense.
That's so interesting. I want to listen to that interview.
Yeah, I've never thought of it that
way. I've never thought about it in terms of balancing scales. I think that's such a vivid example. And I think at the end of the day, you just have to remember conversations are not to be won. There's not a winner and a loser. It's really a mutual place for people to come to the table and share. And I think if we promote that concept, conversations will become less intimidating. And I think that will empower more people to have them.
Yeah, I love that. That's such a good way before we go into our next segment, which obviously you guys are going to know it's more chatty conversation because Sophie and I love talking. So we're going to have a whole topic about more talking. But before we get to that, I always like to remind our guests about our InvisiYouth charity shop as a way to support InvisiYouth, not only just through following our virtual resources. And we'll be not only adding more things to our shop later this year, which is exciting, but I'm wearing it now. We have our Subtle Activist color block bracelet, and we like to say it's the Game of Thrones Starbucks cup in the background of the scene. It's the way to start the conversation without out loudly sharing your platform or your point of view. So we always say these bracelets are made and shipped by young people with chronic illness and disability, and 100% of those sales go towards our programming and resources we provide for free. So if you want to get a conversation started in a way that also is slightly fashionable, we suggest you go to the link in our bio. It's also on our screen, and check out our shop, which is currently on our Etsy store. So now that I've done a nice little plug on jewelry, we're going to switch gears and go to Chat Me Up.
Chat Me Up.
Hey, wanna chat?
Like I said, guys, one thing Sophie and I can have in common, besides our love of the color yellow and Gen Z, is we love to talk. And we think you guys should learn to love to talk as much as us. Sophie's nodding her head right now going, yep, 100%. So in this segment, what we're going to do is we want to figure out ways to share your points of view with different types of people you will be meeting in life. Because a lot of times you'll get very blanketed advice on how to interact in conversation, but you have different relationships with different people. And so that's where from Sophie's work, where if you see on the conversation list, a big thing on their Instagram is Sophie running around New York City asking random people questions. And so those are so many different ways that she has to then hear different points of view and then have them shared. So what we're going to do is have these different topics brought up, and Sophie and I are going to chat. And I'm definitely going to bring up, especially for the young adult chronically ill and disabled population, we deal with all types of hard conversations like discrimination, ableism, medical treatment, misrepresentation, all of the very sad negative things that are on this little poor card that I just mentioned. So we want to figure out those topics and chatting. So Sophie, if people and young people are having kind of uncomfortable or hard talks with family members or siblings, what are ways that you kind of suggest to them to go into those conversations? Because there is a much deeper bond with that person.
This is a great place to start. And I will be honest by saying oftentimes those conversations are the hardest. Having them with the people that you are closest to can sometimes feel insurmountable. And I know myself, I've had a lot of those conversations, and I think they all have to start from a place of mutual respect. And the best way to build that mutual respect is to make sure that that person in your family or that friend is ready to have that conversation. Mm. And I think a lot of conversations go awry when we just want to jump right in because we're feeling something and we have something on our chest and we really want to have that conversation now. But sometimes catching someone off guard can set the conversation up for failure.
Oh my God, yes.
Oh my gosh, I'm sure you've experienced this too. And it's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately that I've been coining as conversational consent. Make sure that the person you want to have that conversation with is ready and able to have that conversation with you. Because sometimes people will be thrown right in and they feel like they have to have it right there in that moment. I know I've experienced that before. And I want to normalize that it's okay for you to say, hey, if I'm being honest, I'm just not in the best headspace right now. Is it okay if maybe we have this conversation at a later time? Or, hey, I just don't think I'm ready to talk about that yet. Is it okay if I reach out when I am? And starting to normalize saying those things because you don't want to throw yourself in a situation or throw someone else in a situation when they're not ready to have that dialogue. So don't be afraid to ask for conversational consent and don't be afraid to step back if you're not ready to have that conversation yourself. So I think start there so that you know both parties are equally ready to tackle whatever topic you want to talk about. And then on top of that, try to identify your own intention for that conversation. I think when I have conversations with my siblings or my parents, you know, I always say, you know, hey, mom, I actually just really want to better understand where you're coming from on this. Or, hey, I'm just really curious about how you reached that, you know, point of understanding in your life. Or, hey, I'm going through this and I'd love to better understand how I can approach this differently and let the other person know why you want to have that conversation too. So it doesn't feel combative or argumentative. So I think those are two really good starting places. But when in doubt, just give yourself some grace too, because having those conversations, whether it be casually on the phone or even at a big family gathering or a holiday, can be a lot. So make sure
that you're also putting... All I was thinking of was the Thanksgiving dinner
setup. Oh my God, the Thanksgiving setup, absolutely. And I think just make sure that you're setting yourself up for success by leveling your own expectations and what you want to get out of that conversation.
Yeah, it's definitely because when it's those family members or friends as well, it's because you have that level of a bond with them outside of hot button topics that you can kind of get passionate and fiery very quickly because there's this back-ended motion of, well, they're going to be here tomorrow anyway, so I can still talk to them about this later. And you feel an ease to kind of hit the gas on your opinion because, you know, I'll always say with my sister and I, you just know facial recognition. I immediately know when we're differing. I know when she's getting hot on a topic, if I'm getting hot on a topic. And as you get older, you do realize you do hit that point where you're like, both of us are just kind of gasoline on this conversation at this point. And like you said, it's knowing that you can pause and come back to it. And I think that is a good point for a lot of young people is realizing you don't have to have the conversations at one time. You can bring them up at different points in different ways. And I think that's a benefit when it's family members, because you want them to understand your perspective and why things might upset you. And when it just feels like they're not, it feels like it's affecting the bond more than just the topic at hand.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And even what about with, I always will say when it comes to romantic partners, we get that with, you work with Gen Z, we're both millennial Gen Zs here. When you talk with people, when they're dating or in relationships and they get those topics that they then figure out they're disagreeing on, or what are ways that you figure out to have those conversations with them to kind of not cause arguments that you're like, we're going to bed angry tonight?
Yeah, I hear you. And I think every relationship is different. So I can't speak for every romantic relationship. But for my own, something that's really helped me communicate better with my partner is treating communication like a love language. And for those of you out there that don't know what love languages are, it's essentially a philosophy around the ideas by which each person individually shows love or receives love. And I try to apply that mentality towards conversations, in that every single person has a unique communication language. And it's important to learn that language in order to best communicate to that person and then also to receive as well. And so when I'm talking to my partner, I always make sure that I'm communicating in a way that I know works best for him. And I think he does that to me as well. For example, I am someone who is so overwhelmed all of the time. It's my toxic trait. And my partner knows that whenever he wants to talk about something more serious, he needs to give me a heads up, because I'm, you know, someone who oftentimes gets so caught up in work and other things going on that if someone brings something else into the mix, I shut down. And so he'll oftentimes say to me, Sophie, whenever you're available, let me know, because I'd really love to talk about X. Or, hey, I know now's not the right time, but when it is, will you let me know? And he knows that that gives me the freedom and the grace to make that decision when I'm ready to talk. And so I think equally knowing when that other person is ready and when that person is, knowing how to communicate with them is key. And this looks different for everyone. I know when I'm having a conversation with someone in my life who doesn't always feel comfortable with eye contact, we'll go on a walk so that when we're having that hard conversation, we're looking straight ahead. Or if it's someone who only wants to communicate via text, oftentimes I'll reply with a voice note, but I know that that's not that person's mode of communication. So just knowing where everyone stands and how they want to better communicate, I think can really foster especially those intimate relationships, because communication is everything.
I love I send a voice note all the time. WhatsApp is, finding that was a gem on WhatsApp. Mine are like 6 minute long voice notes that some of my friends are like, wow, Dominique, it's like, you could have called me for this because you're just going. I love that you can have, that's so key, is the way in which you're communicating. It can be different just as you are two different people in a relationship, but knowing that you're kind of communicating your way, but in a way that impacts them positively, and kind of finding that way of, it's your strength, but to their recipient of a strength for them as well, works out really well. I think that's really, and you're like leading with a vulnerability, because that's kind of that foundation of trust as well, is really good. One thing I was going to ask is conversations virtually. I know especially for young people, the comments section, the DMs, if they're, especially now, it's so polarizing, different topics. And if you're bringing things up that might impact you, if we see young, it's July, it's Disability Pride Month. And so when you see people talking about those topics and sharing them, you might get people commenting on your Instagram story that you don't know, or you do know. And how do you then sort of navigate that way of replying, engaging in that conversation, or knowing when you just don't want to engage in the reply?
This is such a great question. And also, happy Disability Pride Month. I think it's, again, different for everyone. And the key to this is boundaries. And I'm someone who sometimes really struggles to set boundaries, but especially with people on the internet where you have a range of closeness. You can either be someone's bestie virtually or a random stranger interacting with you. You have to know when and how to pick your battles. If it's someone saying something hurtful that is not productive, decide for yourself whether it really is worth your energy to respond. Or vice versa, if it's someone really close to you but still says something out of turn, know if it's the right time for you to engage. And I think oftentimes social media feels like a two-way street, and I think it's a beautiful community building tool. But oftentimes we want to treat social media like a journal, a public journal, a repository of our lives. And I think we have to remember that we're the ones with the pen in our hands. And we can't give too much power to other people who don't know our story, or people who want to be a part of it that you may not want to be a part of it. And so I struggle with this constantly. We've been getting a lot of backlash on social media lately from people that really don't want to have these hard conversations. And that's okay. And I recently experienced this on social media a few weeks ago, and I had to decide how I wanted to engage with some of those comments and those DMs. And I decided to only engage with the ones where I felt there was a relationship someone who I've interacted with before, someone who I felt really understood me, someone who's passionate about my mission, and maybe there was a misunderstanding, and knowing when the right time was to engage. So make sure that you're also giving things time and space. And I think something that humbles me is remembering the way our parents grew up. If there was something going on in the world, or if there was something that someone needed from you, they could only get a hold of you through a landline phone. And that was how our parents communicated. And I think sometimes I so crave that way of life.
It
makes us have to take more time before rushing to respond to something. And I'm someone who's always plugged in, always on my phone, feeling like I need to respond to things right away. But I try to remember that, you know, there can be a 24-hour rule or a 48 or a 72-hour rule, and you get to make those rules for yourself.
Yeah, it's definitely like when you said that 24-hour rule, that's our biggest tip, is have the draft of what you would like to reply to. And if 24 hours later, you still feel that Instagram story is still there and it's in the 23-hour marker and you're almost there, if you still feel as deeply passionate to hit the send on what you were going to say in that time period, then it's something that really deeply impacts you, because about 80% of the time, it's your knee-jerk response of wanting to have the conversation or wanting to reply to something that someone said, and then really not knowing if you want to engage. And that's a really, I like how you said, it's really a good point that we treat it like a journal of communication, but it's really, it's not. A lot of times these aren't people you know, and you're defending your position based on something else as well, which doesn't really work in the virtual space when you're, the way I communicate virtually is a lot more sarcastic. So anytime people are writing comments on our behalf, people know when it's me, because they know the way that I communicate is very different, but that doesn't translate well to people. So I always have to add, if it's a joke, there is an emoji or an LOL being added, that my sarcasm is being distinctly told to the people who don't know that's the tone. And so it's really, that's like a really key kind of, like you said, it's a really key point of knowing when to kind of put a boundary for yourself and it's okay to not reply.
Totally. Totally. Just gauge that for yourself and know yourself.
Yeah. And even the last one I was going to bring up on that is sort of like general public, because I know this is something you do. I give you mad props and congrats that you will talk to random people on the street and ask them hard questions on their point of view. And for a lot of people who are, I know on my end, and a lot of young people are chronically ill and disabled, if we have medical equipment on us or our illness is very, and disability is very visibly apparent, you do get either very visceral reactions from people, whether it's them having commentary you can overhear or them just feeling they can outright bring those, their opinions up to you. Yeah. So how do you, what is sort of your tip when it's the general public, it is random Sally on the street who might say something, and you're, how do you feel when it comes to, I'm going to engage in this, or I'm just going to keep going?
That's a great question. And I think it's different in real life, face to face with someone versus online. And something I always try to do in a hard situation like that is treat the situation as if we're in a courtroom, as weird as that sounds. If someone says something that I find off-putting or something that I'm not sure if I want to engage with, I try to give that person the benefit of the doubt like a judge would in that courtroom. And so before you strike the gavel down with that judgment, try to get to the bottom of what that person is saying. And so when I have the time and the patience, I try to ask as many questions as possible. You know, why, where is that point of view coming from? Do you feel like you've always felt that way? Is this a result of your upbringing or your community? You know, what about X, Y, and Z? Are there any situations in which X, Y, Z would change? Really try to understand where that person is coming from before passing judgment on them. And I think in the world of social media and instant gratification, we want to know things immediately. And I try to remember that conversations are a marathon and not a sprint. So in that moment, when you're engaging with the general public, if you have the time and the energy, try to ask questions and channel that curiosity because you may learn something that you never expected. And sometimes it takes a little time to get underneath the surface. And from there, you can have a meaningful dialogue. So that's, I think, one piece of this. And the other piece is know your audience. You know, how are you communicating your own ideas? And is this the best way to present them? And feel free to give that person feedback as well and say, hey, you know, I'm only one person. I may not know all of the answers. Or, hey, I actually don't know enough about this yet. Or, hey, I'd love to do more research. And just know who you're speaking to. And don't be afraid to kind of tailor your message or encourage that person to better tailor their message so that their view can be best received.
Yeah, I really like that, because I always will say, especially for young people and in my position, if I'm using a cane or my nerve, I have a neurovascular condition. So my left side, my limbs can turn quite blue and swollen. So it's at times it can be a very visibly apparent illness. And it's always the stares or the conversations people will have with who they're with. If you're listening to this, guys, there's lawnmowers outside of my house. So my lawn's getting manicured as we're having this conversation. Not something that Sophie's background will have, because there's very few lawns to mow in New York.
But just wait till you hear sirens. That'll be my contribution.
What I'll always say is, if you're comfortable giving that direct eye contact, that somebody knows their comments have been heard by you. That's sort of the biggest thing. A lot of times conversations don't have to be verbal. You can have those silent conversations of looking at somebody and them knowing that what they're saying is being recognized and received by you. And that's what I'll say, especially if I'm in the grocery store, if I'm walking down the street, if I'm with a family member or a friend and somebody then does something, a lot of people, I'm lucky, will want to then defend me and defend, you don't know what her health is like, you can't ask these questions. But I'll always tell them, I'm probably the first person they're seeing that looks like this, if this is their reaction, or they're just curious because, frankly, in media, you don't see chronically ill and disabled people very often. Yeah. So it's not something they're subconsciously used to. So
totally
giving that silent kind of conversation to somebody at times can kind of jar them, that they don't need to kind of have an instinctual negative reaction to you as well.
Yes. And remembering that because that person may be an acquaintance or someone who isn't familiar with your situation or your perspective or your position, just remember that they don't know you.
Yeah.
And whatever reaction they may be having or whatever they may be saying could be a reflection of something that they're insecure about or something that they're struggling with. Mm-hmm. And hold space for that person and give them grace, because at the end of the day, they don't really know you. And so at some point we have to kind of just let that go, let it roll right off, and let it not mean what we want it to mean when we overthink. Because at the end of the day, we should only be letting people in who really know who we are.
Yeah, I love that. That's such a good getting to know who we are is such a good ending sentence before we go to our intermission segment, which our listeners and viewers know is my favorite time, because you guys get to hear me stop talking and I get to drink my coffee, which is my favorite part of the show. But before we do that, I always like to thank everybody for tuning in to InvisiYouth Chat Sessions. Like I said, it's one of our virtual programs we provide for free every month, and we always do drop our donate link below. You'll see it on the screen around me and you'll see it in our description box, because all of your donations help keep our programming free for the thousands of young adults that we get to interact with every month in the 8 countries that they're a part of. So it really is important to have your support on that. So I always do thank everybody for that support. Even a click of a subscribe really does make it an impact. The algorithm is always super fun when you hit that button for us. So now, without further ado, everybody, it's our favorite segment. It's So That One Time.
So That One Time.
Sophie, I am ready to hear a story and for our listeners and viewers to hear a story. Sophie's been waiting for this moment.
Dominique, I'm nervous. I don't think I'm a great storyteller. And I still don't totally know what I want to share, but I think what I want to tell a story about is really what got me to where I am today. So much of who I am has been defined by risk-taking. And growing up my whole life, whether I would succeed in what I did or not, I always took that risk. And I think there are a few short stories within this larger story that illustrate why we should put ourselves out there, even if it doesn't work out the way we wanted it to. So starting with when I was in middle school, I found out that the musical for the 7th and 8th grade was going to be Annie. And my dream, let me tell you, was to play Annie. There are videos of me when I was a toddler running around my house, scrubbing countertops, singing It's a Hard Knock Life. Annie was everything to me. And so going to get ready for that audition process, I was thinking to myself, okay, I have to be Annie. This is my lifelong goal. And I didn't even think about a world where I wouldn't get the part. So I was sitting in the audition and our music teacher had us all audition for the parts we wanted to audition for. And at the very end of the audition, she said, okay, does anyone else want to audition for any other parts before we wrap? And something within me in that moment, I don't even remember what it was, but I shot my hand up and I actually said, is it okay if I audition for another part? And the teacher said, sure, what part? And I said, I want to audition for the star to be. And everyone around me was like, what is this girl talking about? What is that part? I've never heard of that part in my life. And it was a person that got a solo in the big musical number NYC, and no one else auditioned for it. But I remember in that moment thinking, what have I got to lose? Let me just take that risk. I'm only a 7th grader, so maybe there's a world where I don't get Annie. Let me just put myself out there. And so I went up to the front of the room. I sang that solo. And leaving the room that day, I thought, okay, I'm definitely getting Annie. This is my lifelong mission. It's going to work out. And as I'm sure you can guess, they posted the cast list and I was not cast as Annie. And I was devastated. I was devastated. But then I kept scrolling down the cast list and I saw that I got cast as the star to be. And in that moment, even though I didn't get what I really, really wanted in that moment that I thought was success, I actually ended up getting a role that I wouldn't have gotten had I not put myself out there. And I think this was the first time that I understood why risk-taking was so important. And I think that really carried me through the rest of my life. Every year in high school, I always ran for student body president, and every year I lost, but I still put myself out there.
My 2 years in middle school.
Okay, so not alone.
Not alone.
Telling me that.
Taking those posters down when you lose is a sad feeling.
It is a sad feeling, but for some reason, I always continued to put myself out there. So fast forward, starting this business, everything I've done has been a result of putting myself out there. And oftentimes it's in really funny ways that have gotten me the guests that I've gotten to have on the show. And so this little girl from Kansas is all of a sudden interacting with people like Dr. Oz and Ginny Weasley from Harry Potter and these people that I have seen in the mainstream since a young age. And all of that has come from a result of risk-taking. So I'll just share two more quick things as a part of this story time. The first was a summit that was taking place in New York City for the therapy app Talkspace. And I had just moved to New York. I didn't really know anyone. And I saw on my social media feed that they were having a young mental health summit for young Americans. And I reached out randomly to the person who runs the account. And I just said, hey, I'm Sophie. I run this organization. If there's anything I can do to help with the summit, let me know. Didn't expect anything in return, but I put myself out there. And the person who runs the Instagram responded and said, hey, actually, do you want to come to the summit? I'll give you a free ticket. And I thought to myself, okay, sure, why not? So I went to the summit. I walked into the New York Times building in Times Square, not knowing a single person. And I sat in a session about mental health and social media. And after the session, I decided to approach one of the panelists who I was really inspired by and just kind of ask her what got her started and have a conversation. So in that dialogue, we realized that we had so much in common and we started talking about ways that we could collaborate and support one another. And then all of a sudden out of left field, this woman asked me, by the way, do you have a phone charger? And I said, sure. And so I ran back in the auditorium. I grabbed my charger, brought it back for this woman. And she plugs in her phone while we're still talking. And she said, Sophie, you are a lifesaver today because I actually have to go backstage and meet Michael Phelps before his keynote. And I needed my phone to take a picture with him. Actually, would you mind coming backstage and taking the photo for me? And in that moment, I never expected anything like that to happen, but I walked in that day not knowing a single person and wound up getting my picture taken with the keynote speaker, Michael Phelps. And so I think it's a good example of just putting yourself out there, taking risks, walking up to people, starting these conversations, because you never know where they will lead. And so I know this has gone on for too long, so I'm not going to share the other story, but the way that I'm going to wrap up this bow is that living here in New York has really been one of my wildest dreams as a little girl growing up in Kansas. And there's a line in that song that I sang in that Annie solo that said, NYC, I give you fair warning, up there in lights I'll be. And I think that gave me the confidence to really lead my life, knowing that, you know what, I'm going to keep putting myself out there. And one day down the road, I have faith that the universe will work out for me. And now, where I am now, I can confidently say that my face was on a billboard in Times Square. And I think there's something really surreal about that full circle moment of being my younger self in middle school as an awkward kid on stage, singing that line about being up there in lights. And from having taken risks from that point until now, it happened. And my face was up there in Times Square, sharing my mission with the world. And so for anyone out there listening, it's not about the destination. It's about all of those risks and the bumps in the road and the obstacles that got you to where you are now that we should be celebrating. So what are those moments that you're experiencing now that will be a part of your story?
Oh, I love that. I love that. I thought you were going to say I was cleaning my house as a kid wanting and wearing a red wig. And I was waiting for that to come in at some point. You're like, I showed up to that audition with a red wig.
And surprise, I'm Annie on Annie. Broadway.
Oh my God, I love that. And kind of like you said, I'm going to make a very cheesy segue to our last segment of the episode, guys. And as Sophie said, the destination of your journey is the most important. So we're going to celebrate that in our last segment with Path to Power.
Path to Power.
Path to Power. We want you guys to feel like you can stand in your power without exhausting yourself, without the discomfort. And so we're going to be chatting about the ways to do that. So I think the one big thing I was going to ask is, for a lot of young people, they're a little more introverted when it comes to sharing their points of view. They're shy in conversations. A lot of people would think I'm very extroverted, but when it comes to me being in a new room of people, I am quite introverted in terms of jumping in and sort of trying to stand on the soapbox. That's why we do subtle activism. It's shaped around me wanting to subtly kind of move the dial. And so for those people who are a little more introverted or shy, what are ways that you think they can kind of stand and be empowered in themselves in having conversations that might be uncomfortable?
This is a great question. And I am someone who is an introverted extrovert, so I get it. There are moments when I don't want to stand at the front of the room and share my viewpoint. And I think it all starts with knowing yourself. Mm. I grew up in an environment with so many forces around me telling me what to think and what to believe. And only recently in my life have I started actually questioning those things and understanding my own inner voice. And so if you're not ready to share your point of view, or you're not comfortable sharing it with others, start with yourself. And sometimes that looks like sitting in front of your mirror and talking out loud. Mm. Or it could be putting pen to paper and journaling. Maybe it's talking to a mentor or a therapist. Like, really do what you need in order to better understand what your views even are in the first place. So I think that's an amazing starting point. And then once you start to feel comfortable with what you do believe in and you do want to share those views, practice makes perfect. Find a community of people or a safe environment or a friend group where you do feel like you can share those views in a trusted environment, and start to practice. Have some of those conversations, see how they go, you know, check the temperature, just constantly check in with yourself and start finding ways to do that. And I think we love being that sandbox for people at the Conversationalist, where we have our community of young people chatting about anything and everything under the sun that matters to Gen Z every day on Geneva within our community. And that can really be a great practice space and a way to really test out your viewpoints and engage them with others and see how they land and work on honing your communication style. So find the right place for you. Find a community and find that place where you feel comfortable sharing. And then once you get to that point, just start to continue sharing your voice in a way that feels authentic to you. And I think it will only resonate with others once your voice resonates with yourself. So make sure that you know exactly what you believe in, you know why you want to voice that opinion, and then you've practiced sharing that opinion with others so that your message or your view can really resonate with whomever you're sharing it with.
Yeah, I like that a lot. A big thing that we'll always say is that's like I mentioned before, that conversations and sharing your point of view and being an advocate can also be a nonverbal way of doing it. And we'll always say, like with Invisi Youth, we have volunteers that you'll never see in our programming. They'll never be front value. I imagine even the Conversationalist, you have a lot of people that they're not going to want to be the ones that are the loud on the soapbox making change. And so knowing that you can even share your points of view by signing petitions, sharing things on social media, following different organizations, volunteering to them, donating. It's like you're helping you're giving it, being an advocate and helping the people by helping those who want to be in front of the camera and in front of the mic. And that is, people don't think that that's as powerful, but it really is, because you're kind of the current pushing the way forward, if that makes sense.
Yes. There's so many lanes to a movement and so many lanes to what it means to use your voice and be an advocate. So know what lane is best for you.
Yeah. And the last thing I wanted to ask you to go on that is sort of, we always like our guests to share like a general piece of advice. So on this mindset of finding your path to your own personal power, what would be your advice for those Gen Zs, the young people that want to engage in those hard conversations more, share their points of view more, that would be authentic to them?
The only advice I'll give is something that I give myself every day, which is, as soon as I begin embracing the part of me that for so long I resented, is when I'll be able to impact the world. And for so long in my upbringing and throughout my life, I resented my identity. I was the only Jewish student in my school growing up, and I felt a lot of shame around who I was, which led me to feel like I didn't have a voice. And as soon as I realized that I wasn't really waiting for anyone else's permission to have a voice, and I had one all along, and the moment I realized when actually the thing that made me different was the thing that gave me power, was when I started to become a change maker. So for anyone out there that may be feeling the way that I was, which was that there was a piece of myself that I really didn't want to be a piece of me, I think the sooner we can accept and embrace and celebrate that piece of us that contributes to our unique voice is the minute that we'll actually create impact and unify the world. So embrace who you are and embrace your unique voice, because you were created exactly as you are for a reason.
I love that, and resonates so well for young people with chronic illness and disability to just embrace the medical side of themselves and the non-medical aspects of their life, and allowing that to be one of the lenses that they get to move forward with. That's such a good ending point, Sophie. Throw the cards away. We're gonna done with that. I don't want any more advice. We're good. I'm so thankful I got to have you on the show, Sophie. And I want to make sure that our listeners and viewers get to find you and the Conversationalist and POVs. So where can everybody follow you on social media and find you on the internet?
You can follow me personally on Instagram at Sophie Barron and all other platforms. And same with The Conversationalist. We're at The Conversationalist, and you can learn more about our community and how to get involved on theconversationalist.com. Dominique, thank you for having me and for creating such an important platform to amplify the voices within the disability community and the chronically ill community. And I'm inspired by what you do. Your voice is so needed in this world, and I'm just grateful that I got to be a part of it today.
Oh my God, clipping that so I can have a little like empowerment boost at the end of my day too. Thank you so much. And like always, guys, we're going to have all of Sophie in the Conversationalists link below in the description. So you can immediately click it and go give her a follow and see the work that they're doing. And as always, you can find Invisi Youth on all social media platforms at Invisi Youth and find us on our YouTube channel and all audio podcast platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Google Play. So you can continue following us on our virtual and our audio resources. So thank you so much for being on the show, Sophie. Thank you guys so much for listening or watching. And I will speak with you all soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye.